Hi, you entrepreneurs. Today we have Ben Fairbrother. He is the vice president of sales for Moonlight Metery. Moonlight Metery is on the cutting edge of a mead. Meads, I think something when I think of mead, I think of like old time Vikings, more Renaissance. And I never had it before. I only had it a couple weeks ago, but it is delicious. Listen, you're going to want to listen to this. You're going to hear Ben's journey of actually sales, seeing his dad start the business when he was in high school, and how he's kind of transitioned back into the family business and one day looking to take over the business. It's something, I think, a new perspective, a new way of looking at the entrepreneur mindset. Even though he's not technically the entrepreneur, it's still, I think, a powerful thing because he's seen it from the start. He's seen it from when he was an adult as a teenager. So take a listen, please subscribe, and tell your friends.
Welcome to the Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur.
We've raised the bar.
Learn firsthand from successful business owners and create your own path to success.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
It's time to hit the road to growth with real estate agent Vinny SD.
All right, so we are here with Ben Fairbrother. So we usually have the owner of the company. This is kind of a little switch to it. We have the vice president of sales for Moonlight Metery. His dad was the actual founder, but we're talking, I guess, to the future owner?
Yes.
Yeah, so, and I think that's going to be definitely a different perspective that we've been seeing. Most of the people have one sort of struggles that they're dealing with. And I think by talking to Ben, we're going to see it from a totally different light, seeing another struggle that he has to probably deal with, kind of growth and so on and so forth.
Certainly. I mean, you know, being that it wasn't me who started the business, but at the same time, it's not a business that's existed since my young childhood. Hmm. This business started basically when I graduated high school. So I've gotten to grow up with it and kind of learn as I go and kind of treat myself like a jack of all trades, getting to learn each different aspect of the business in and out, from production on up to doing tours and tastings. And
so you got to see it before, or at least remember before this was not even around.
Oh, definitely. I remember when my father started making mead. Actually, that was back in 1995. And you know, all growing up, he was always making beer and mead at home. In fact, I remember playing in a sandbox and going over, bringing a bucket of sand and water to get some hops from him, pretending I was making beer in the sandbox.
Wow.
Yeah. So from that perspective, I grew up watching him perfect his talents and really perfect his product and win awards and, you know, gain up the courage to really launch this business. It was a big leap of faith for him. And then actually getting to watch him take it from our garage to where we are now with 6,000 square feet.
Wow. So what, I have to first jump, mead is something, and we kind of talked about this before we started the podcast, is something that I only tried once before, and that was only a couple weeks back.
Right.
Like, when I think of mead, I think of like, oh, it's like Vikings and like old time, like when you go to these Renaissance fairs, like the mead right there.
Totally.
So he was doing beer. He was making beer and mead. Why did he venture with focus on the mead aspect of it?
So at first he didn't know about anything about mead. When he first started making beer, it was just beer for him. And he had joined Brew Free or Die, which is the oldest homebrew club in New Hampshire. Hmm. And like I said, at that point in time, he had no, mead wasn't even on his radar. He'd never heard of it. But later on that year at a homebrew party, one of his friends brought a sizer for him to try. And he didn't want to admit, but he didn't know what he was talking about. He had no idea what a sizer was. Huh. So he just blindly accepted the taste. And when he drank it, his face lit up like a baby trying something good for the first time.
What's a sizer?
Yeah. It's a mead fermented with apple cider.
Okay.
So he had the same question. He's like, wow, what is this? What'd you just give me? And Simon's just like, oh, it's a type of mead with apple cider. And he said, well, wait a minute. What's mead? And that's where he fully explained that it's the oldest type of alcohol. This really blew my dad's mind and piqued his curiosity. So he started really digging in. He got some old monk recipe books that monks used to use back in the medieval times. And of course, started digging in and making his own batches. So that was pretty much where he got his first taste. And from then, it was a passion that he continued pursuing.
So how does it work? So walk me back. So you're in high school right now.
Well, not right now.
Not right now. But you're in, like, we're going back to when you're in high school, right?
Yeah.
You're in high school, and your dad's making mead, right? And he's just doing it in his garage, you said, right?
Well, the garage was right at the end of high school, like right when I graduated, basically.
Okay.
In May of 2010.
Okay.
So that was right when he got zoned.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's doing it in high school, right? You're a high school kid, probably enjoying life a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about your high school experience for us.
You know, I was into, kind of martial arts, you know, jujitsu, kind of stuff like that. Okay. Sports, cars, of course, you know, hanging out with friends. That general type thing.
And probably most high school kids, you know, at that age, you're like a little rambunctious. You're like, you know, dad wants you to help him out, and you're kind of just like, I got my own things to deal with. Was there anything like that with you?
I was actually always pretty willing to help. You know, I've always been interested in this.
Just to get a little taste of the meat.
Yeah, just get a little taste of the meat. You know, come down in the morning time and go out to the garage, and he'd be like, "Hey, this is something new I made. Why don't you try this?" I'm like, "It's not even 10 a.m. yet. Like, relax, you know." But you know, it's good to see that level of creativity in person.
Yeah.
You know, and to see that passion and drive, because that's a good motivator for me. I can then internalize that and say, "Hey, look, he made this from nothing." So I was always very willing to help and take time.
Did you know that you wanted to be a part of this? And I guess it was later on that he started the actual platform, the Mead platform. But so that probably wasn't something that you're already looking for joining this business.
You know, it was something that I was interested in. Okay. But in college, you know, I had so many different, ideas and aspirations. So it was definitely in the beginning something that I really wanted to do, and it's still obviously a big passion of mine. Mm. But there was some time in the middle in college where I was exploring and kind of considering other paths as well.
What brought you back to joining the company?
So after college, I came back to the U.S. I was in Switzerland for my degree. And
are they big in mead over there?
No, they're not really big in mead at all. Mead is big in Poland and Europe.
Okay.
But even then, when I was in Poland, I couldn't really find it. Okay. So right now there's more, but still it's a growing kind of thing. But when I came back, you know, I came back with a business degree, international management specifically, and you can do a lot with that degree. Yeah. So I was kind of lost. I was thinking, do I want to go into finance? Do I want to get into marketing maybe? Or I was looking at some different paths, and a recruitment company came into my father's business trying to see if he needed any new employees for them to hire. And he said, no, but my son needs a job, because I was just helping him out kind of as a consultant type basis while I was looking for a job. And so he had me go to an interview with them. They saw me as more than a temporary candidate and asked if I'd like to actually work with them. And they made me the youngest full desk permanent placement recruiter.
Okay.
So basically, that was me getting into the sales realm. And after doing sales there for about 10 months, an opportunity opened up at the meadery to go back and do some sales in New Hampshire, business to business, going out to accounts. And so I jumped on that opportunity, and that's kind of where things got back and where I picked up the mead game again.
So walk me through the process. How do you pitch it? You're coming to my restaurant, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people probably don't know about mead. They kind of haven't tasted it, right?
Right.
So walk me through, what's the sales pitch go like?
Well, typically I'll walk into a place, you know, obviously introduce myself, say, you know, hey, my name's Ben. I'm from Moonlight Meadery. We make world-class meads and ciders. Have you ever had, you know, any of our meads or heard of our brand before? And most oftentimes, you know, sometimes they've heard of us, but most of the time they haven't even tried mead, let's say. In that instance, I want to provide as much education as I can about mead as a category, first and foremost, because there tends to be an issue where people get these preconceptions about mead. They think because it's made with honey, it must be sweet. So I try to educate them that it's not just a singular beverage, but rather a whole category that can range from 3.5% alcohol up to 25% alcohol. Wow. And it can be made with any different type of honey. You can use different fruit juices to dilute the honey or water. You can also add spices after the fermentation. So there's a really big range of flavors and alcohol ranges that you can create from this as well. So I try to educate that. And then I just let the product speak for itself. You know, we have a very nice product, so I walk them through and I taste them on the different meads, and they can see that we really stand for balance and complexity. Mm. Whereas some other meads tend to be cloyingly sweet, a little bit one-dimensional in that regard. We have acidity from the different fruits that we use that even though it's a sweet mead, it'll finish drier. Mm. So we have a big range of flavor from that.
So again, there has to be some sort of hurdles that you've had to overcome in probably your personal, but also in the business of being a salesperson in this industry. What are some of the hurdles you've gone through over the years to get to where you're at now? Or at least the company too.
The main hurdles I would say is, well, in any sales job, you need to become comfortable with getting rejected, right? Yeah. You know, but people tell you no all the time. You have to be okay with that and not let it affect you negatively. So that was probably like the first hurdle. And that hit me when I was a recruiter, you know, calling people. And most of the time, they'll just tell you, no. Even if they pick up the phone. Most of the time, they don't even pick up the phone, yeah. Right? So
Were you actually calling like or doing a dialer?
I was calling.
Oh, yeah. You were? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like a giant recruiting company. Huh. So it was an open sales floor. And in the morning time, I would look at job ads, write some interesting job ads, make about like 40 calls in 3 hours to those jobs and leave a bunch of messages that I have the perfect candidate, even though we necessarily didn't have them.
Yeah.
So that kind of cut my teeth in the sales world. Then when I got into alcohol sales, obviously that's a whole different ball game, driving around versus calling. So there, you know, you kind of meet a different type of opposition where people might be closed-minded just to the concept of mead. And so there's a lot of kind of gentle education required, and you can't let that really affect you, because if you respond in a defensive way, then it's all lost anyway. So you just kind of have to gently guide them that your mead is different than whatever they might have tried, or, you know, that it's not going to be a terrible syrupy beverage. So it's kind of working that gently and understanding how to do that without pushing someone away from the sale.
So how long have you been doing the sales for the mead aspect?
I've been working full-time at the meadery since July of 2015.
Okay, so what are some of the things you've learned in that process? I know it's knowing the product, enjoying the product. Mm-hmm. Are you making the appointments before you go there? Are they all walk-ins, or how does that usually work?
I prefer just walking in personally. You know, everyone has their own different style. Some people really like to make appointments and do those. I'll make appointments if it's required. You know, if I go to this place and they tell me, oh no, appointments only, then I'll make an appointment. But normally I'll just drive around to a certain area and look for craft-centric accounts primarily. And I'll go into those accounts and just present our products.
How do you get access to know who's ordering what, or is it just like...
You can kind of tell about a craft-focused account versus more of a, you know, macro beer type account from a number of things, just looking at the draft list, for instance. Mm-hmm. But being that we work with distributors in most markets, I have the advantage of just asking the distributor about their top accounts, and they'll share me a list of, you know, where they do business. Maybe they won't all be good accounts for us, but it gives me a good idea of where they're already working. Mm. So then I can go and kind of introduce our products and try and get us into those accounts as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Off-premise and on-premise are two kind of completely different worlds.
Yeah.
In the package world, you know, there's a lot of convenience type stores. And though we might get the product in there, it might be a slower pull than in like a specialty grocery store or someplace like Cost Plus World Market. So you also want to make sure that you're not selling product into a place where it's just going to sit, and then that store is going to have a negative impression of your brand. Mm. So it's not that you just sell your product everywhere. You have to kind of
have some restraint.
Yeah, you have to have some restraint so that you can maintain that good, positive image of your brand in the market.
So let's say someone's looking to get into the field, the alcohol field.
Right.
Right. What's kind of advice that you think yourself or your dad kind of seeing over would probably give?
It would depend on what type of alcohol. Right now, there's over 7,000 breweries in the U.S.
Wow.
And so... I might not recommend opening a brewery, but I'll say this, there's always going to be room for brew pub type concepts for a destination location. So
what's a brew pub?
So let's say you're opening up a restaurant concept, but it's also a brewery.
Oh, okay.
So that would be a brew pub. And Mitch Steele, who used to be one of the top brewers over at Stone Brewing Company, he's actually the reason why we got distribution into California back in 2011. He left Stone and he's opened up another company called New Realm, which is essentially that concept. You know, he's making a brew pub. So it's a big restaurant. You can have events there and different things. It's also a big brewery in there. So people are constantly going through there and they're making a high profit because they're the ones making the beer.
Oh, wow.
And so there's always going to be a model for that. The problem becomes in this industry with distribution. So when you start distributing your products, now there's 7,000 other breweries distributing their products. They're all vying for shelf space. They're all vying for, you know, spots in distributors' portfolios. And they're all vying for the mind share of the reps in those portfolios. So that's where it becomes really sticky. You have to have a lot of marketing budget. You have to have people on the ground going out and pushing it.
You said 7,000, right?
Yeah, 7,000.
How many mead, I guess, breweries? Are they called?
Meaderies.
Meaderies, yeah. Sorry. Okay. I guess that makes sense with the name.
There's about, I'd say maybe 500 or 550 right now.
Oh, well, okay.
Compared to when we started, I believe there was 250 or 300.
Oh, wow.
So that's 10 years ago, basically.
What is it? What would, like, do you have the numbers for worldwide?
Worldwide, I don't have the numbers, okay. But there's, I'd say the majority of the meaderies in the world are in the U.S. right now. There's a substantial amount in Poland, and there's a couple other, like in Denmark and some other places, South Africa, there's one as well. But generally, there's not that many in the world. Yeah.
Do you think, looking at your own self, if you could go back in, would you jump into the business earlier, or do you still have to?
As far as starting the business, or no, as far as me getting into
Yeah, getting into it, like because you left a little bit to go into the sales field, and then came back. Have you ever thought about if you would have started a little earlier or moved in a little earlier? Or?
You know, I'm happy with the trajectory as it went because that sales experience outside the company is very crucial. You know, understanding different management styles, understanding a different industry and how they're selling and how they're working things helped me. And it also really helped me get a good like telephone personality as well and be able to leave really nice voicemails since I had so much practice doing that.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change it. I think it was a good trajectory. In fact, even potentially more experience in outside sales companies might even be beneficial. You know, different perspectives are always useful in this field.
So do you think if, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, do you think it'd be if someone has a business and they're trying to bring their kids up in the ranks and for them to take over the business, would you say it'd be more beneficial for them to actually go to another company and come back? Or what kind of advice would you give, let's say, to actually maybe a parent that's starting their own business?
I would definitely suggest that. I would suggest, you know, encouraging them to get experience in other companies and understanding those different styles of operating, because if you just work in your own company, that's the only experience that you get.
Yeah.
That's the only perspective that you get. So you're not going to be able to think outside the box as much.
Yeah.
So that's where I really think, encouraging that, encouraging kind of getting that world experience first, and then coming back and taking all of that back and incorporating it into the business, that's going to create a much stronger business in the long term, I think.
One of the things that I hear and I think about when you have a business and that person started from the ground up, and I know it's a different case with you because you were old enough to actually see it from the ground up.
Right.
And I think so. It'd be more so if someone was like a little kid and they weren't actually don't have the memories of the business starting and seeing the struggle they had some person had to overcome.
Right.
That's always a thing, because there's we were talking about beforehand, a 50% failure rate for second generation businesses. And so I think that's the thing that people look at and they're kind of like, how do I make my kid want it as bad as I did, or know that it's not always the good times that are going to happen?
Yes. I think you're right. You know, having the perspective I have where I've seen it from the very beginning with an adult mind, you know, definitely changes things. You know, if I didn't see all the struggle, I wouldn't appreciate it as much.
Yeah.
And then I might become complacent. So, you know, there's obviously a big question, you know, why do 50% of businesses fail when they pass to the next generation? I would argue that potentially a lot of it is complacency. You know, they're not looking around the next corner trying to see what's coming. They might just be a little bit status quo.
Yeah.
And so that, in addition, getting outside of the company will help them see that as well. You know, that the world isn't always easy. And if you have to work for someone else, it's not always fun. So
So what's next for Moonlight Meadery and yourself?
So for Moonlight Meadery, we've recently just launched a new series of session meads.
Okay.
So session meads are what we consider to be lower alcohol meads. Ours come in around 6 and 6.5% alcohol. And so we're canning those. They're carbonated. And it's more similar to almost like a cider might be, but no apple juice is involved. We made one called Raz What She Said, which is a raspberry session mead. It's just raspberries, honey, and water. That's all the ingredients. And yeast, of course, to ferment it. So this new line of products is very exciting for us because it reaches a whole new demographic of customers. And it's a much easier drinking product, whereas our higher ABV meads, which tend to be around 14% alcohol, those are more like a wine. They tend to be more of a sipping type beverage. So that's the latest new thing for the meadery. And we're hoping that that's going to bring a lot of new entrants, new customers into the mead world. Mm. We're seeing it already. We're seeing a lot of people get excited by it. So that's the latest for that.
I was at a flea market the other day and someone was selling honey. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about all the great things you can do. You can put honey on like wounds and everything like that. Is there anything, maybe there's no study or anything like that, that shows the difference of drinking mead, because it's, you know, has a lot of honey in it, compared to like wine or beer, with the effects on the body? Or
so I'm not allowed to say that mead is healthful.
Okay.
You know, the government's very strict on that. You can't advertise alcohol as being a healthful thing, but I can say that honey is, and a lot of our ingredients are. You know, the meat industry doesn't have the longevity that the wine industry has, and they don't have those third parties, third party organizations that can promote stuff like that as much. But honey has a very high antioxidant profile. It's antifungal as well and antimicrobial. So once you open a bottle of our mead, instead of going bad in a couple of days like a wine will, it actually stays for up to a couple months. That's from the antioxidants. So that prevents the oxidization of the mead. Mead is known to age the best than any other alcohol for that reason. I've actually had a 50-year-old mead from Poland. It was one of the smoothest things that I've drank. Although I can't say that it's healthful, I can say that everything that we put into it is all natural and it's all very healthy ingredients that we're using. So we never use any extracts or anything like that. And the honey that we're using is either True Source certified, which is very important to safeguard against fake honey from China, or it's organic, which is an even more strict certification, which determines that the entire foraging radius, which they say is about 10 miles around each hive, must be untouched by humans, not even farming or anything. So it has to come from a completely untouched wilderness, and that honey usually comes from the Amazon for us. So not only is it helping to maintain some wilderness there in the Amazon, not all deforested, but it's also helping to kind of mitigate the beehive collapse situation, which is coming about from these corporate pollinating companies, essentially, that bring beehives around the country to different parts of the country to pollinate at the same time.
So what he's saying it's... He can't say that it's not healthy. He can't say that he's helping the rainforest. He can't say these things, only with a smile on his face.
Yes, exactly.
Fair enough. What? Anything? Have you guys? And again, I don't even know if you even know this. Has your father ever thought of like start talking about a transition of when you would take over the business, or is that something that's not so far out that you're like, we'll get there when we get there?
We haven't talked any specific timing of that, but he has expressed, you know, that that he'd like to step back someday and, you know, push it to me because, you know, the stress is kind of weighing on him a bit and, you know, he'd like to take some steps back. But right now, we don't have any set timeline for that.
For something like that, being that you're from sales to taking on other avenues of the business, is there stuff that you have to kind of put in place and say, okay, in the next 5 years, I need to understand this aspect of it, or this year, I need to understand this aspect of it?
I understand most of the aspects of the business. And because of my interest in finance and accounting before and my quantitative, I guess, Profinity, I was doing some projects in college relating to more of the financial side of the things with the business, doing financial projections, for instance, and preparing those for our investors. So from that perspective, I understand pretty much all the back-end books of the business. There'd be maybe a little learning curve of just understanding the ordering schedule for, you know, our suppliers and kind of understanding our payment terms and making sure that those are all kept, you know, all those kind of finer details. Also, I'd like to get, I mean, I have a very good understanding of the production, but there's some things that are still just up in my father's head. Yeah. So that's obviously very important to gain as well. Making the best product is the most important, right? But I'm very comfortable with my business knowledge, at least.
That's great. At least, you have an understanding of what's next. You know, that at least shows that there's some sort of game plan, I guess, in place.
Definitely. You know, my father and I have two different kind of styles, and I feel like they play off of each other a bit. You know, he's kind of more excited, and when he sees an opportunity, he wants to jump on it and just go right in. Whereas I'm a little bit more
reserved,
and I'm like, well, let's take a step back. You know, let's analyze the situation, look at the different opportunities we have here, and see what the cost benefit is going to look like for each option. So, you know, I try to slow him down and he tries to go. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a seesaw, but it works.
That's fantastic. Well, so if someone's looking to know about your guys' company, maybe learn more about Mead, anything like that, what would be the best source for them to kind of go towards or find your stuff or whatever it might be?
Our website is always a great resource, as well as Instagram. Our website's moonlightmeadery.com. And we do have a store on there, but we're also available throughout San Diego County. And then our Instagram is at Moonlight Meadery. So those, I'd say, are the two best places to go and learn about our company. If you want to learn about making mead or want to learn about different mead styles, you know, I'd suggest you can reach out to me for some mead recipes. I'll happily share with you our whole process. And my email is ben@moonlightmeadery.com. Or there's a website called the BJCP.org, and that's the Beer Judge Certification Program. They have mead style guidelines that outline the entire, it's like an encyclopedia of mead styles. Wow. They'll tell you all the different vital statistics of each style, what goes into it, and the history of it, and all that. So if you really want mead knowledge, there's your Bible for you. So
I think one of the final stats maybe to end with is 7,000 compared to what, 500 you said?
Yes, 7,000 compared to 500.
Breweries to meaderies. So I appreciate Ben for all your time. Hopefully all you listeners got some great information about mead, about the process, about, you know, someone putting a game plan to take over this business, and just Ben's journey of, we're probably going to hear your journey later on as soon as you actually, 5 years, 10 years, I can only imagine what's going to be next
with the industry. I'm very excited for it, and thank you very much for having me on, Vinny.
Appreciate it. Well, again, hopefully you subscribe and share, all you listeners out there, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur. Please like, subscribe, and stay connected. Visit www.vinnysd.com.
Yeah, I created a website.
Hope to see you again next week. Team Vinny SD, signing off.